Today's decision by the United States Supreme Court is a victory for the Constitution, victory for the voters of Michigan, and victory for the rule of law.
That was Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette yesterday speaking at a press conference about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that upheld Michigan's constitutional amendment, which prohibits affirmative action at the state's public universities. In the 6-2 ruling, the judges offered 5 separate opinions showcasing drastically different views. MSU law professor and Supreme Court watcher Phil Pacillo has joined us throughout the year as this case developed, and he's back again to break down the latest decision. Welcome back, Phil.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
Break down what the decision was in this case.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the court, in sustaining the validity of Proposition 2, has determined that the voters of Michigan have the right, if they decide that they don't want Michigan's public universities to use race-conscious admissions policies, to simply decide not to have them. And that's, according to the court, that is consistent with the Equal Protection Clause. And there were a few decisions that the court had rendered decades ago that suggested that this kind of thing might not be constitutional, and that was the basis for the lower court's decision. But the Supreme Court backed away from its reasoning in those decisions a little bit and emphasized the fact that what happened here wasn't the product of an effort by the people of Michigan to purposely discriminate against anyone, in particular those who are usually the beneficiaries of affirmative action policies. And therefore, it was a perfectly constitutional action by the state of Michigan to say that public universities can't do this.
What else stood out or surprised you with this ruling?
Well, I was surprised at the level of division among the justices. I did think it would come out this way. I think the court took the case because the lower court's decision, in the court's view, needed to be reversed. So the end result didn't surprise me, but I was surprised by the fact that you had 4 members of the 6 justice majority that determined that Proposition 2 was valid, that they had such different thoughts on
justification.
Exactly.
Yeah. And talk to us a little bit about those divergent views.
Yeah. Well, I think it came down to what do we do with the prior precedents. Justice Kennedy, who wrote the opinion, which was the main opinion for the court, but he wasn't really writing for the Supreme Court because he didn't have a majority on the justification. So he was writing for himself and Justice Alito and Chief Justice Roberts. And Justice Kennedy thought that the prior precedents, which served as the basis for the lower court's decision, should be reinterpreted. He wouldn't admit this, but I think it's fair to say that he reinterpreted the prior cases in order to emphasize that the purpose of this kind of a measure, like a referendum, a statewide initiative, if the referendum isn't serving to aggravate an existing racial injury, particularly one that the state may have had a role in, then it's perfectly valid. So, but Justice Scalia was of the view that those prior precedents were just completely wrongly decided, and they should be done away with completely.
Were these reasonable ways of handling a reasonable way of handling the precedent, or could this decision be considered judicial activism?
Oh, I think arguably the prior decisions were more in the nature of judicial activism, but it really depends upon whether you agree with where the court has gone on the issue of race since those decisions were decided. The court has taken a very strong position on any sort of racial consideration by the government. Anytime the state or the federal government is considering race in any fashion, the more recent court decisions have been very hostile to that. They presume that sort of action is unconstitutional, and it's the government's burden to show otherwise. So in the case of a public university, which wants to consider race in admissions, the public university would have to justify that decision on the basis that there are simply no race-neutral alternatives to achieve our objective of diversifying our student body. So even the kind of racial consideration that would be motivated by good intentions, the court is equally hostile to. So if you agree with the court in that regard, then you're probably going to think that the prior decisions were more in the nature of an activist court. But if you agree with those older decisions, like and Justice Sotomayor was in the decision yesterday pointed out that the court has probably changed the way it's approached race since those decisions. So
much was made of Justice Sotomayor's dissent, 58 pages,
yes,
and a pretty intense dissent. Here we've had already all these divergent views among the majority.
Correct.
And yep. Then we have Justice Sotomayor's 58-page dissent.
Yes.
Talk to us about her position.
Well, it's interesting because it really reads like a manifesto as to the importance and significance of race-conscious admissions policies, mm-hmm. and that we really need these. There's no way that the universities who want to use these policies can achieve the goals that they are seeking to achieve, which is they want to have a student body and the benefits of diversity, and they want traditionally disadvantaged minorities to have a presence on campus. And she's emphasizing that it's their position that they can't do it without race-conscious admissions.
Any other way.
Correct. Okay. So, and now public universities in Michigan, so long as Proposition 2 remains in force, and the decision certainly doesn't mean that Proposition 2 is the law of Michigan forever. I mean, the people of Michigan could, in the next election cycle, decide to do away with Proposition 2.
Okay.
But in the meantime, her position is that race-conscious admissions policies are crucial, that the state of Michigan has effectively prevented public universities in Michigan from using them. And what's so interesting about the case is that there would have been no constitutional issue at all here if the Board of Regents of the University of Michigan or the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University had decided, you know what, we just think that race-conscious admissions policies are a bad idea, and we're going to do away with them.
Well, interestingly, though, some of the universities involved say that they will use, as you mentioned earlier, race-neutral alternatives,
right,
still open to them in an effort to diversify the student body.
Correct. So now they have to, they really have no choice. So in considering applicants on the front end, therefore, they can't give a boost to a particular applicant simply because he or she falls into a particular ethnic category. But they might be able to focus on socioeconomics.
Other definitions.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, for example, was English spoken as a second language in your home growing up?
Okay.
What's your socioeconomic status and that of your family? Have any of your prior, any members of your family gone to college before or law school before or medical school before? So there are a number of factors that might be considered which would actually lead to the enrollment of similar numbers of racial and ethnic minorities that you would have targeted through consideration of race on the front end. So that all remains to be seen whether that's effective. I think the universities would say it's not going to be effective enough. We're not going to have the numbers of minorities that we're looking for.
Well, the studies have shown pretty clearly that university admissions amongst minorities have dropped since Prop 2.
And that's something Justice Sotomayor even whipped out a few graphs to emphasize that point, focusing particularly on the University of California at Berkeley and how racial and ethnic enrollment of the traditionally disadvantaged groups has dropped. And in Michigan, I think the studies have shown the same, although I think the Attorney General would dispute the level to which they've diminished.
ABC World News tonight said Michigan State specifically has gone from 10% to 5%.
Yeah, and that's a precipitous decline.
Yeah.
So it could be that race neutral alternatives haven't been used to the degree that they should, mm-hmm. or as effectively as they should.
Okay.
That all remains to be seen.
You mentioned Justice Kennedy's emphasis on direct voter involvement a minute ago. What about protection from the tyranny of the majority, the so-called tyranny of the majority, not to mention numerous state referenda that ban same-sex marriage?
Correct. I mean, that's going to be very interesting. I think he was responding, in his opinion, to the argument that had been made by the folks who were challenging the validity of Proposition 2 in this case, they were basically saying that a proposition, a statewide referendum that would be voted on by the people, is no way to handle an issue of this level of sensitivity. That when you're talking about race, that the debate inevitably becomes inflamed by extremists in the debate, and you just have to let the process be decided through another channel. And Justice Kennedy's response to that was, no, we have to trust the people, that this mechanism of initiative, of statewide initiative, is a way for the people to be engaged in the political process. It's a way that people learn about issues more so than if they were relying on their elected representatives to enact legislation. So he comes across in the opinion as a big fan and very trusting of the initiative process. And of course, the question will he be such a big fan when it comes to a challenge like Michigan's proposition prohibiting same-sex marriage?
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is that he'll be quick to say, well, it's one thing for the state of Michigan to determine that it doesn't want to use race-based consideration in college admissions. It's another thing for the state of Michigan to deprive an individual of something as important as the right to marry the person whom he or she pleases.
Right.
I mean, that's something he's emphasized in his opinions on homosexuality and marriage. He's really emphasized that that this is the way that people define themselves. This is the way that they define their existence, is through sexual intimacy and marriage. And the state just simply can't take that away from someone.
That's almost becomes a First Amendment thing, doesn't
Correct.
It?
Correct. Yeah. And he even cited the First Amendment in his opinion yesterday.
Sure.
That for the court to say no to the people.
Is this the end of all racial preferences in education as we know them?
No, far from it. I think the Fisher decision from last year is a much bigger barrier, much more significant barrier to affirmative action programs nationally speaking. The decision yesterday only affirms that a state can, if it wants to, prevent its public universities from employing race-conscious admissions policies, but only a few states have them. Michigan is just one of five or six states in the country that has a policy of this sort. Most states, therefore, their public universities are free to consider race in admissions so long as they're doing it properly, so long as they're doing it according to the Constitution. And the Fisher case from last year was very specific about what universities have to do. So again, it could be that the people of Michigan decide in a coming election cycle, you know what, Prop 2 is a bad idea. Our public universities are losing enrollment of minorities. That's affecting the educational program. We're going to do away with it. And then they'll be right back to where they were before Prop 2 was passed.
Mm-hmm. Phil Puccillo is an MSU law professor and Supreme Court watcher. Phil, thanks for the insights. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, Mark.